There's been a lot of discussion about Rupa over the past 3 weeks, and it's been conditioned for more thinking about them. Visible object is one of the eight inseparables. Visible object is one of the eight inseparable rupas, and only visible object can be seen. So without visible object, there can be no seeing. So obviously one of the conditions for seeing is the arising of the jitta that sees. Yes? This all sounds very logical, I know, but first, yeah.
Seeing is the jitta, the condition for seeing
is the arising
is
of
the
visible
object, which impinges on the mm-hmm. eye sense.
Mm-hmm. But if there's the arising of the visible object, and it does not impinge on the eye sense, there's obviously no seeing. Because the visible object, as one of the eight inseparable rupas, could arise quite frequently, but if it doesn't appear to seeing, there's clearly no seeing. Okay.
So the
countless kalapas,
eight rupas in the kalapa.
Yes.
Arising and falling away everywhere, all over the place, all the time.
Right.
Not experienced.
Yeah, not experienced, right. Because there's no conditions for the arising of seeing. I mean, there are no other... Seeing, one of the conditions for the arising of seeing is clearly a visible object. You need a visible object, but if there's no vipaka coming to fruit at that point, or whatever, there's no seeing. And I have a note from the other day that says, what is seen is the nimitta of the four primary rupas, which I take it, it's visible object that's seen, but when we think that, we say what is seen is the nimitta of the four primary rupas, that is that in the sense that the four primary rupas condition visible object at this moment? Because the four primary rupas, perhaps I'm wrong, but my understanding is that it's visible object that's seen. And as visible object conditioned, I guess, by the four primary rupas,
right?
Can
so
we actually say that what is the seen is the nimitta of the four primary rupas?
Yes, in the sense that the visible object that actually seen, each one is conditioned differently by
okay.
the four primary rupas.
Okay.
So in this sense, what is seen, that particular visible object is conditioned, is arising with those primary rupas.
Yeah.
So without them conditioning it, that particular visible object wouldn't be seen. So that's
right.
what it's
So
meant.
It wouldn't be seen and couldn't be taken as something.
And
okay.
visible object is there with the four primary rupas.
Yes.
Otherwise, there cannot be the seeing the shape and form.
Yes. Okay. Yes, and without that, without the four primary rupas providing, for lack of another word, the shape and form, without that, then a visible object couldn't be taken for something.
Four primary rupas.
There would be no impression of shape
yeah.
and form and no thinking about the visible object in any way at all if it wasn't for it being conditioned in that way by the
right.
four primary rupas.
And because of the quick succession of arising and falling away is what produces the shape and form. That's the mita anu bhyanjana.
The impression of the shape and form.
Right. Right.
Yes, and the quick arising and falling away produces the impression of continuity.
Yes.
Unknown.
And
the unknown.
Unknown, yeah. And also the shape and form, because it's rising and falling away of different rupas.
Yes. Yes. Okay.
And it also produces the impression of what I think the texts call compactness, or the group. so object.
About visible object contacting the eye base, just now Ant said that unless there's karma that's going to bear fruit, there would not be seen. So my question is there a case of visible object contacting eye base and no seeing?
Who knows?
It's possible?
No matter what we are thinking, who knows? It's just speculation.
So the condition for seeing, because sometimes we condition for seeing is visible object contacting eye base.
There must be four, not just one.
Also.
There has to be karma conditioning seeing.
So they have to be
karma is
coinciding.
So when
that is meant.
Okay.
The coming together of the ayatanas, the visible object, the eye sense, the citta, and the citta seekers, they will have to come together.
Okay.
Talking in details like that makes a lot of sense to me. Because the other day we talked about petas and devas, and we know that these planes also are the planes with citta and rupa and citta-sikas. So that means there is visible object there, but normally there's no conditions for we as human being to see them. But at the moment that there's karma, that conditioned seeing to experience that visible object that taken for gauze or something, it can happen, right? It depends on whether karma is ripen at that moment to experience what?
Without karma, can there be vipaka?
Sure.
The question of different planes and different visible object in different planes came up in one of our morning walks, didn't it, Ken?
Yes.
And I think you're asking, does it mean different location?
Yes, I was, yes.
Because you said that, to your understanding, location was a concept.
Mm-hmm.
So, would you like to put that as a question?
I suggested that perhaps in ultimate reality, the different planes of existence were just different ways in which citta can be conditioned to arise, like where it has three roots or two or less. But then John said there are whole lists of many planes of existence. So then I said, oh, well, perhaps we should just take them to mean that they're all references to namas and rupas, and not ultimately real at all.
I agree that actually there are only
jitas, chetasikas and rupas, and so if there's no understanding of paramatta satcha, of paramatta dharmas, one will read and think that there really are petas and people, but actually it's just jitas, chetasikas and rupas, but jitas are different. Patisandhi jitas are different according to past karma. And so what we actually talk about by worlds or realms are really just different citas, chetasikas and rupas.
Yes.
So, Ajahn, can you say a bit about different planes of rebirth? Because people with the same roots to the Patisandhicitta could be born in different realms,
according to karma.
Yeah. And I think Ken's question is, well, is there a real difference, or is it
seeing is not different from seeing here or seeing there or any place? Thinking is not different either, no matter where.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, sorry. So we still don't know the difference.
The idea of place, right? The realm, yeah.
Yes.
Because of different karmas.
Different karmas.
Mm-hmm.
Like even we can see what we call animals.
Yes.
So it's seeing still sees visible object, but because of the Patisandhi Citta conditioned by different karma, bodily, the rupas that are taken for the body and the shape and the eyes are different.
Yes, I might have got you wrong there, but that explains the animal realm as opposed to the human or spirit realms. But it doesn't explain different spirit realms, for example, does it? There's no real difference between a spirit who's born in one realm and a spirit who's born in another spirit realm, as there is between the animal and the spirit.
It's still just cheetahs, seekers, yes, and rupas. Like if a human in this life develops jhana, then these are different kinds of cheetahs.
Yes.
So it's actually a different realm of cheetahs, but even as a human being, that's possible.
Yes.
Or Lokutra cheetahs is a different realm of cheetahs, but it's still just cheetahs, cheetah seekers, and rupas.
And Arjan said the difference is in the karma. So even though it's not, the karma isn't fundamentally different in any way, it is still different. So it conditions are different. So it conditions a different rebirth. The karma is different, even though it's not fundamentally different enough to produce a different type of being, it is different enough to condition a different type of rebirth.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So,
we can be born in one realm or another. There's no fundamental difference. Like, it's still in the same number of roots, but there's a lot of different realms that you can be born in. So it depends on the karma. No fundamental difference, but still a difference.
Like even amongst humans.
Karma, the degree of karma, of the kusala karma, that condition rebirth is different. So different features, or like we discussed in the suttas about being born beautiful or being born this or that. So depending on karma, so differences even in the human realm.
Yes.
But I think we do refer to the beings in different realms as being different beings, different kinds of beings. So they're not human beings and they're not beings of another realm. So each realm.
Dozens and dozens of realms, still different beings.
31. Is that right, Achan? We refer to the beings of one realm are different from the beings of another realm.
And what about now?
Yeah.
When we talk in terms of Tatu, we don't talk about people in Riyam at all, right? Tatu, only Tatu.
Tatu.
We don't talk about world or anything, we just talk about that. So even right now, so many, many different tattu, even karma and so on. And if you don't say any word at all, still elements are different by conditions, right? And there are not just this world only, there are other worlds too, right? Dao, excuse me, this Thai word. Stars and moon and so on, see? So if you don't call anything, they are different. But how can we understand the difference? There must be words which represent different realities. That here is what we call human world, and the other place, the other world, we call it other thing.
Yes, I'm catching on there. So it's not just it's not just thinking. There really are other beings.
We think according to what is real.
Can you explain why would you or anyone say that it's just thinking, these realms?
Because I've been saying that for a long time. Whenever we say here, oh, that's just a story, that's just thinking. I've taken it a bit too literally. So I don't know. There's no different beings. It's all thinking.
It's like now if we think about animals, because it's easy to understand. So actually, no animals, but the reason we refer to animals, we use that kind of language, because there actually are particular rupas that are referred to as animals. If there weren't differences in the rupas or differences in the cheetahs, there would be no reason to refer to animals. So the Samuti Satya, the conventional truth, is used because there are distinctions in the Paramatta dharmas, but actually still only cheetah, chetasika and rupa.
So thinking can't come down to all just to thinking. Any rupa can be thought about in lots of different ways. A rupa can only be correctly thought about in one way. If I can,
it sounds like we were discussing the other day why think about glass and not microphone. Mm. The reasons that we think about microphone one time and glass another because of differences in the visible object and the other rupas that we've been discussing.
Yes.
Conditioned in different ways.
Sure.
Can you give an example of how a rupa would be thought in one way, correctly in one way? Apart from thinking in terms of microphone and pen?
No, I can't. Except to repeat what you people are saying. My old theory was that there was no correct thinking, just thinking, just the way thinking has been conditioned to arise and function. No ultimate correct or incorrect thinking.
And just to be sure that, there's no conflict. When we say, for example, that we are able to distinguish microphone from a pen is because of difference in rupa, we're not saying that, we're not suggesting the idea of the microphone is made up of certain kind of rupas and a pen is of another. But it's just that it's a reflection of difference in rupa, such that, say, an ant walking on the microphone will not have an idea of the same ideas as you and I would have. But it would be different walking on this than walking on the tablecloth, for example.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Good, yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
One other point I was going to mention on your visible object question and the conditions for seeing is it also depends on the stage of the visible object.
Yes.
Because it lasts only for 17 cheetahs. So if, for example, 15 of those moments of the visible object have already gone before there are conditions for idor, averting consciousness, then no conditions to see, for example. So it depends on the visible object, whether it's just arisen or it's almost falling away. So other factors like that as well.
Ken, getting back to what Ajahn said, what about now? Can there be awareness of the visible object appearing now?
Yes, I think so.
Without having to thrash out the whole story behind it?
Without having to think about the story of a visible object at the same time?
So I have to go back to the beginning. When you say that, can there be awareness? Seeing is aware, but Panya might not be aware.
So. Right, but does visible object appear now?
Yes.
Yeah. And for awareness to arise, is it necessary to understand the whole story of visible object before awareness can begin to arise?
Right awareness, you mean?
Yes.
I suppose you do need to know the whole story, don't you? At least in theory.
Well, isn't awareness about knowing as it is and as it presents itself, a presently arising Dhamma?
Yes.
Right.
Or are you looking for the distinction here, Jonathan, between a moment of direct awareness, at which time there will be no thinking about the object, or whether it's a... it'll just be direct awareness of the nama or the rupa around which there is no thinking at that moment, as distinct from knowing the theory.
No.
Intellectually understanding, having it some intellectual understanding that is required for awareness to develop.
No, I'm not really talking about that. I'm just talking about the fact that whether the thinking that occurs has some correct correlation with the actual Dharma, or whether it's just thinking, it could be anything.
Ajahn, could I ask you to comment on that? That awareness of presently arising reality. We need to know something about Dhammas, but not in great detail.
Enough to be conditioned.
Enough to be conditioned. And what is enough?
At moment when right awareness arises.
What is enough is not the matter of words or the ideas, but it's just hearing again and again. That means enough. Hearing and understanding again and again at the intellectual level.
And more confidence in anatta. Otherwise cannot be right awareness at all. And elements different, even we don't talk about them. Are elements.
Yes, they definitely are. Yes. Mm-hmm.
So we just talk about whatever is real, no matter element or ayatana or whatever reality which appears is real. So we talk about them in many ways just to condition right understanding of no self at all.
Yes.
It doesn't mean that because we think, so there are elements, not like that. But there are elements, all are elements, no matter we think about it or not.
Yes.
So at this moment, we are talking about whatever is real that we haven't known about that before at all, and begin to understand.
Can I ask a question about seeing an invisible object? Because so far, what I understand about the sense door experiences is that for example, if it is a loud noise as against a pleasant or an unpleasant sound, the unpleasant sound would be, when it strikes the ear base, would be a condition for akusala vipaka, means that hearing. And their pleasant sound would be a condition for kusala vipaka. And when we're talking about seeing invisible object earlier, it sounded at that time almost like the vipaka, the karma which bears vipaka, would determine what's heard.
No, because the sound has already arisen, and then it depends on past karma as to whether there is any hearing of that sound. So if the sound that has arisen is an unpleasant sound, then it depends whether there are conditions for akusala karma in the past to condition hearing at that moment. That's all. So many unpleasant sounds arising and falling away all the time, but it just depends whether there are conditions for past karma, akusala karma in this case, to experience it or not.
Mm-hmm.
So what conditions that hearing is that sound impinging on the eye, on the ear sense, and must be the akusala karma to condition the hearing of it.
And also attention and all that.
And the accompanying mental factors. That's why, inner and outer ayatanas all coming together at that moment, and that sound must have enough length left in it for there to be the hearing of it.
That's what I thought about this, because when I just came in, you were mentioning to Anne about the it depends on which which point the rupa hits, right? Sometimes there's no hearing because it's a bit too late, or, you know.
So I think it would be more correct to say that gamma conditions whether the sound experience is pleasant or unpleasant, rather than saying that the experience of pleasant or unpleasant sound is a condition for kosara kosala gamma.
Both the sound and the karma have to be conditions for the hearing of that sound. And yes, when that sound has impinged is important, because the 17 moments beginning with the last Bhavanga Chittas and then the ear door averting consciousness and then hearing and then more Chittas, so it depends when it has impinged.
And I think what John is trying to stress is that without the karma, there wouldn't be hearing.
So countless sounds and visible objects arising and falling away out in the forest, no conditions for any hearing of them.
Like after seeing, after hearing, there can be already the hearing of that visible object, that outward object, or seeing the visible object, but sometimes no conditions for thinking about it more than that. So it also depends on the karma, right? Yeah.
And also it's possible that because it's fallen away already, that there's the hearing or seeing of it, but not the kusala or akusala chittas that follow, depending on its length. But yes, countless moments of seeing and hearing without... There has to be at least one mind or process following, but...
Just like now.
And when we were discussing the other day about the Chittaja Rupas, yes, all the details in Abhidhammata Sangaha, which we checked when we're talking about the breath.
Would you tell me about what you checked?
You remember when you asked Alberta and I to check the sources, and afterwards we found that it is in the Abhidhammata Sangaha, the details of the Chittaja Rupas, the different kalapas that we discussed.
And those with sound?
Those with sound. So as you mentioned, those with sound, they have to be with Vacivinyati. So either in the Vacivinyati Sada Dasada, that is the kalapa of 10, the 8 indivisible Vacivinyati and Sada, and the last one, the Vacivinyata Sada Lahutadi kalapa, the 8 indivisible, the 3 Lahuta Rupas, the Vacivinyata and Sada, so
13.
Either 10 or 13 if there is sound. So if breath is accompanied by sound, then it has to either be in a kalapa of 10 or 13, cannot be in 9 as...
Visuddhimagga, it appears to refer to a group of 9, including sound.
That's why we have to study carefully and think more about that, because you see that sometimes it said roughly and sometimes it said in details. So we have to understand and don't change the understanding, like the citta condition, rupa, 8 rupa, right? The first kalapa. And what in the body that is conditioned by citta, what kalapa? How many? See? Because actually breath is just the 4 primary rupas and the altogether 8 indivisible rupa. So all over the body, citta condition that kalapa, the indivisible rupa, right? And breath is just one kalapa, which is conditioned by citta. But when people hear the sound of breath, see? So that is the idea of breath with sound. And in Visuddhimagga, also talk about the kalapa, suttaka kalapa, with sound. But we have to think, is there any difference between breath and other kalapa, which is conditioned by citta. And when there is sound, there can be the in the visuddha rupa with sound conditioned by uttu, but not by breath. But how come the sound of breath? And sometimes when the practitioner or the one who develops samatha and attained the fifth jhana, see, it said that no breath. But we have to not forget that what or how many cittas condition rupa. And it said in Nirodha Samabhat, in Nirodha Samapatti, no citta, so no citta charupa. See, when and how come at moment when there is no arising of rupa at all, only when there is no citta. So we have to think many angles or in details about this and that all the time to understand really whether it is said roughly or very precisely. Because you see that now, even citta conditions breath, the sound of breath does not appear at all, right? So when does it appear? It must be different. But it doesn't mean that at that moment, citta conditioned breath with sound. It only conditioned the eight individual rupa, like other kalapa.
Are you saying that the kalapas, which are breath, can either be with or without sound, or without sound, but it's when it's heard, it's actually not the breath?
When it's heard, it's like this compact of the kalapa, which we call breath. So it can be soft or hard to be heard, strong or soft. Like now, it does not appear. No one hears it at all. It means that usually there is no sound with breath. But when there is sound, and we call it the sound of breath, it not other place, but of that particular, when we call breath, it must be here, the kalapa here.
So right? Usually the breath kalapa arises without sound, but sometimes can be with sound.
Not in the kalapa.
In the kalapa?
But the impact.
Oh, impact.
Of the kalapa.
Okay, the impact of the kalapa.
Conditioned by uttu.
Mm.
So there must be, the sound is conditioned by uttu and eight individual.
Right.
Rupa.
So it's like the example of rupa, that conditioned karma, that maybe conditioned temperature, like we talked about the deva mansions. So in the kalapa, which is breath, no sound, but because of utu, there are conditions for there to be sound of that breath afterwards. Sound is conditioned by it.
Otherwise, there must be particularly at what moment citta conditioned breath and sound. It must be, if it's like that, yeah.
And if, for example, in the reference which Paina referred to in Visuddhimagga, actually it's just one line, and when it mentions nava, nine, it's actually just roughly referring to the breath, which is just the eight indivisible, and the sound conditioned by that utu, that temperature.
Like when one is diving, see, yes. It said that there is no breath.
Yes.
But what about how many cittas condition breath? As long as there is citta, without a ten, apart from the ten, the cittas can condition breath.
Even the two cittas, mm-hmm. They are
a heart. And for the fifth jhana, the breath must be very, very delicate or very, very soft, because citta is so very, very high kusala. When one is angry, I think that the sound of breath is so hard or harsh. See? But it doesn't mean that at that moment a kusala citta conditioned the eight indivisible rupa with sound. It is as usual, but it appears like a patient, see, to see whether that person is going to die or he died. Someone might put a finger here and see whether it touches the softness or hardness of the breath or not. But actually, even right now, does it appear? See?
So at certain times, like the Arupa Watcher or dying, it may seem that there's no breath because it's so fine or soft, but has to be there because it's conditioned by all those cheetahs.
Who knew that Buddha died? Anuruddha. How, Anuruddha?
Velapanya.
The foremost.
Yeah, when the Buddha was dying, some of the disciples thought he was dead, and Anuruddha said he hasn't attained Parinibbana yet. He is, and so Anuruddha was watching the Buddha go up and down with the
He's only in the fifth jhana, see? Not died yet.
And when you gave the example the other day about, for example, if someone is diving underwater, free diving, and conventionally we say, one holds one's breath and then dives under the water and some people can stay under the water for a long time. So conventionally we'd say that they're holding their breath, there's no breathing, but actually there are cheetahs conditioning breath. What was the point that you were making there?
Because you see that when it's the samatha pavana, according to breathing in and out, it's not the vipassana pavana, which actually arises by conditions, no selection, you know. And breath, the citta conditioned breath appear, no selection, without selection, see? So that breath arises and falls away in split second, 17 moments of citta. Who knows that except that level of panya, the vipassana panya. So breathing in and out is not this kalapa, which lasts for only 17 moments.
And the reality, the breath, the reality, so the kalapa that is conditioned by citta, which is breath, so actually each rupa in that kalapa together, the breath is actually the kalapa of all those rupas together, the eight indivisible, is that correct?
Soliditi and so on.
But all of them together.
But it's in one process of citta, it's 17 moments.
But in one process of citta, the 17 moments of citta, there are 17 moments of citta jarupa. Is that right? Every citta?
Each rupa lasts only 17 moments of citta.
Yes. So,
except some, which is not the, what you call, nipana rupa, visupama.
Okay, my question is there citta jarupa at each moment of citta?
Almost every. So we talked the other day about how, for example, the 10 dvi panchavijnana cheetahs don't condition rupa, but almost every cheetah conditions. Condition many kalapas of rupas.
So it's constantly, constantly, constantly being conditioned. Yeah.
Your example of holding one's breath when diving still breath conditioned by citta.
Ajahn, what I understood from her comment of why she used this as an example, it's like an example of people use when in samatha they think of breathing in and breathing out as being something to do with breath. It's just a conventional breath, and the same thing if you dive under and we conventionally say holding your breath. But as we know, cheetahs and rise and fall away all the time in rapid succession. So almost every cheetah
conditions rupas. So even at those moments when conventionally it seems that one's holding one's breath, actually cheetahs are conditioning breath.
Well, because that's
hold your breath.
What?
There must be the breath conditioned by citta. No, it doesn't appear like now.
You mean no breathing in and out?
No conventional.
But that's not
breath.
The same as breath.
Breath.
No conventional breathing, but breath is a different rupa.
But still,
particular rupa.
The question is, what is the reality of what we call holding the breath? Then there must be reality, right, at that moment. So what is the reality that makes it different from holding the breath and having the breathing in and breathing out?
Strange to me.
What's strange?
So different, like you gave the example the other day of raising your hand. Actually, conventionally we talk about raising the hand or breathing in and out. Actually, different rupas conditioned through by, in this case, kaya vinyati. But actually, they're just different rupas.
But you cannot hold the breath forever. So what? How come? And what is the difference?
You cannot raise your hand forever.
So I guess my question
follows that. Why? This may seem very stupid, and my apologies if it does. Why can't we just stay underwater forever? Well, I know that's the answer, but where does it come into? Yeah,
it's like saying the same. Why can't you hold your hand forever, or why can't you squat down forever?
Rest your hand. It's because of Vayutatu. Who knows the Vayutatu? The element of vayu, see? Without vayu, the hand cannot be raised.
Okay, so without vayu, the body
but
cannot...
But vayu does not appear. No matter you walk or no matter you move, what part of the body?
Okay. And when you speak, why can't you speak?
Forever, because of patavi
right.
Dhatu, because of earth element, it cannot... Dharma's different roots.
Yeah. Well,
cheetahs.
So I have a question to Nina's comment about strange. What is strange is there's no breathing, but still breath.
By conditions, as long as citta is there, arising and falling away.
Even if it is not noticeable at all,
it's still... Best conditioned by citta.
Like raising your hand up.
Yeah,
see?
Yeah.
Who knows the way you talk to?
So we really don't know anything about breath.
Right.
Yeah.
Someone in our group in Vietnam had a grandfather who died some time ago. And she told us that before he actually died, like at least 3 or 4 times, he died. Everyone thought that he died, and they left his body for many hours. And then everybody started to do the ceremony, and then he gained his consciousness again, conventionally speaking. So maybe sometimes we don't know. So theoretically, we cannot say that the breath has stopped, but it seems that the breath has stopped.
Have an anuruddha there to tell them.
I have a question, Sarah, about exposition. I mean, what's written in the Visuddhimagga then? Because it's so confusing, what the Visuddhimagga said about breath, rupa, vijnana, the kaya vijnana, that's breath. So, and from Kunsuchin Ajahn's explanation about, for example, when we're angry, conventionally we say that it conditions a harsh sound, but actually anger doesn't condition sound. So can we say that in the case, for example, in this case, in the Visuddhimagga, it's being a bit kind of conventional plus detailed?
Even in the Patana, it's like shorthand that's used. Like, for example, in the Patana, when it talks about climate as a condition of Pakatūpanisyapaccaya, it's conventional terms, so it depends on the understanding. So that's why one has to consider carefully and read all the details to really know what is meant. Or like the example Kunsuchin gave about karma conditioning celestial abode, or how at death no breath conditioned, or so it, one has to read widely and carefully to know what is meant. And what the way she explained how it could be meant is like in a, usually in breath there are just the eight indivisible rupas, no sound, but the temperature in that kalapa can condition sound immediately afterwards. So when it's referred to the eight plus sound, it can be like that, for example. So one has to just consider carefully. But anyway, in texts, when they go through the details of the Chittaja Rupas, it's very clear there cannot be sound conditioned by Chitta without Vajivinyati. And it makes sense, like now, how can there be sound without Vajivinyati?
So did you say that dosa cannot condition sound? What did you say?
Yeah.
The text says that?
No, or? I thought Acharan was saying as an example to explain the case of breath, that people normally say that the chitta conditions the sound of a harsh voice.
Or harsh breath.
Harsh breath. Ah. Okay, so it was the harsh breath that you said.
Run fast. Yeah. What about the feeling of breathing and so?
But what about the dosa mulya chitta? Does it condition sound?
Breath, I'm talking about breath.
You're talking about breath,
sound.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
louder.
Okay.
Loud breath.
Okay. So the kalapa with breath is conditioned by chitta, and that utu can condition sound.
So the dosa mula chitta condition sound and vajivinyati at the same time?
We are talking about breath.
Breath, yeah.
Which is different in a day according to what you are doing.
Can you
like
say
when
more?
You're angry,
yes.
You breathe heavily.
Yes.
When you're talking harshly, you're breathing at the same time. That breath that comes out is different. So, but that's not conditioned by the chitta.
It's conditioned by the
breath also? No, it's conditioned by utu, that harsh sound of the breath that comes out.
So how is the difference with the normal, with when there is not dosa, that the breath is different from when there is dosa? When there is not dosa and when there is dosa, there's difference in the way you're breathing?
Yeah, so different. No difference in, it depends on whether the rupa, it conditions the utu conditions the rupa in a particular way. The breath rupa, the what we take for breath, in a particular way.
So that utu is different when it's not dosa and when it's dosa.
Mm-hmm.
The kalapa, the eight indivisibles conditioned by the chitta, will be different accordingly to the chitta which conditions them, and those rupas will condition each other, and the utu in that kalapa will condition a kalapa with sound, which can be nine, and
that uttu condition further kalapas with sound accordingly.
John, I'd like to get back to the subject of what is enough to know, because it's Ken's last day today, and he's mentioned often about pleasant, unpleasant, and very pleasant objects. So I think he would probably say that one has that when there's awareness, that that's would be something that awareness knows about visible objects.
Now there are conditions enough for seeing to arise.
Yes, there are.
And now there are conditions for enough, condition enough for hearing to arise, but not enough for right awareness to arise.
No. No. Are we talking here about the amount of theoretical knowledge we need? Because I think we all agree that there has to be lifetime after lifetime of detailed Dhamma study before a moment of Satipatthana can arise. So,
uncomfortable.
Yes. But in this lifetime, perhaps if that work has been done...
At the moment when it arises, there can be the understanding that the conditions are enough to condition right awareness by then, even right now. No exact time.
I think that when we have very different accumulations, some people hearing about, like you hearing about Dhamma, and you were heavy, very happy with just knowing there are Dhammas, and others are not happy with that and ask why there is rupa that are taken for microphone and for other things. So that is all natural. But I believe that so in the later stages of Vipassana Jnana, there is the knowledge of the successions of different realities one after another. So without knowing the in details of all realities, how that knowledge can come to be?
Yes, but if I understand your question, it's answered by the fact that there has been detailed study developing Panya for countless lifetimes already.
I think I spoke too quickly earlier. Not too quickly, I mean, I didn't think about it. I think what John seems to be trying to get at is Achan. Because of what I know from the discussion between Ken and others is that Ken likes to reduce everything, talk everything in terms of what's now, only what appears. And whenever someone talks about, for example, makes a statement about other beings in other realms, it kind of sometimes he objects to that and saying that that's all just thinking, and sometimes it's he doesn't even believe, it sounds like he doesn't even believe that there are actual realms out there. So maybe the question is, it's all right to hear about Nama and Rupa, about what's present, but don't we also need to hear that, for example, it's not just what's appearing now that's real, that there's reality out there in different realms, not only on what's happening in the moment.
And it will lead to more and more interesting thing to follow, not only Deva.
I don't get you.
Like, when one's so interested in other realms and Deva realms and this and that, then just leads to more and more speculation and thinking about what isn't
talking about an interest in it. He's just talking about whether it can be said there are other realms, right? Yeah.
Whether we need to hear all that, understand, apart from the understanding that there is only ever the present moment, we need also to hear about the stories about other realms to know that there's not just the what is experienced here. There are
it can be chittas and rupas. To realities, no matter what realm.
What was the purpose of hearing about the details of other realms? Because it's seeing is still seeing, hearing is still hearing, thinking is still thinking now.
The purpose is to know that seeing now is not the only seeing. That there can be a visible object is not the only visible object. That there can be visible object without seeing, for example. There can be the Mahabhuta Rupas without being experienced. Or there may be chittas that's not only my chitta. And there is not just the human and the animal realm. There are other realms.
So can we say that no matter where, when there are conditions for seeing, seeing arises, we don't mind this world or other realm?
Right. So conditions for seeing is not just now. It's not just the seeing that's happening now.
Whenever it arises.
Whenever it arises, wherever it arises. Right.
Arjun, before you said that the kalapas occur all over the body.
By that, conditions.
Was that just a conventional expression? I mean, there's no body. We all agree that there's no human beings, therefore no
is
body.
Is there any hardness in the body?
Well, in the body. I have to ask what you mean by the body. I mean, do you mean the body base, the rupa that's body base? Or
usually we understand body, but when we talk in terms of Dhamma, there is doubt.
Yes.
But actually you talk about what you take for body, but no understanding what body is or what conditions body, mm-hmm. See? But the body is a body anyway. But we don't know what the body is until we study the teachings, then we learn to understand what it is that we take for body.
Mm-hmm. When Ajahn refers to the body, she means what we take for the body.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But is what we take for the body covered in kalapas?
There are just kalapas to arise and fall away, and some of those kalapas we can refer to as the body and we know what we're talking about.
Okay.
But actually there is no body.
Mm-hmm.
But when we refer to eye sense, for example, there is a particular kalapa that we can say is in the body, but actually it's just a kalapa that's conditioned to of rupa's condition to arise and fall away. It's not in a body, there is no body.
No.
But it's differentiating it between that kalapa and another kalapa that is what we call, that we might refer to as the table.
I see, yes.
But it's just a kalapa, there's no body.
Kalapas, they rise and fall. So if we have a concept of a tree or a person, is it because there's not just one kalapa arising, there's many, many. So if we see a tree and we keep staring at it and it stays a tree, is it because there's similar kalapas arising and falling all the time? It's not like there's one kalapa that's gone and then...
Like now.
Like a tree doesn't turn into a motor car or something, a tree... as we're looking, stays a tree because...
something too.
Like now, multiple experiences of seeing visible object and arising in rapid succession and thinking between, and then an idea of Jonathan or table because of those visible objects seen.
I guess we have to be careful about saying, yes, there's many galapas, because, I mean, I think I could come back again to Ken's point. There is only, for the development of understanding, there is just this present moment of seeing, hearing.
No rupa.
Seeing of visible objects, hearing no, no of rupa.
Seeing is rupa, many kalapas or one kalapa?
The moment of seeing just sees the visible object in one galapa.
Can that be known?
Well, eventually, yes.
It be known?
Right this moment, not for me. There's not enough understanding.
Otherwise, there cannot be the understanding of galapa.
So, when there's beginning level awareness, it's not awareness of a single galapa, obviously.
No idea about galapa.
No. It's awareness of visible object. But that would have to be many, many galapas. Because there are people and things.
So sometimes we do have to think in terms of many galapas.
Otherwise it doesn't make sense. That is not the right awareness of
it's not reality. Awareness, but it's sometimes you're drawn. I mean, sometimes I often come to the conclusion that thinking about sense door experience, common sense thinking, is not far from reality.
Is that kalapa?
No, that time we're not thinking in terms of reality.
Thinking is not kalapa.
But because of kalapa, different rupas conditioning other rupas, what I like to think is that when we see something and we reach out for it, for that thing, it's because there's a relationship between particular rupas. Because when I touch, what I take for a glass is visible object. When I touch it, it's hardness, softness, heat, cold. So that's just common sense experience, day-to-day common experience. And I think that wouldn't be the case if there was something in reality that didn't reflect that. So I think sometimes we take it too far when we question and say that what's seen is only seen, there's nothing else. No. There must be something else.
There is nothing else, yeah.
But visible object is conditioned by Mahabhuta rupas.
Yeah, it's still only the visible that's seen, though.
Right, but
so
there
is still correct.
But seen. I'm not talking about seen, I'm saying what exists. When visible object arises, there are other rupas arising with it.
But it's still just that one world that's appearing, that's the point.
Right.
That's all that can be known.
That's all.
Anything
that,
else is just thinking.
It's only
that visible object that can be known at that moment. It's only that one world. And the purpose of the teaching is to understand what appears, not what arises and doesn't appear.
Okay, so you're saying that it's pointless to say that the visible object is conditioned by Mahabhuta rupas.
The reason we mention details like this is because otherwise people have the wrong understanding of what visible object is. Nina mentioned she thought in the beginning it's one sort of neutral colour or something like this, or they can't understand why there is thinking about different objects. Or so in order just to hear that there's only visible object and there's just seeing without any other details is not enough to condition right understanding and awareness of realities, unless one is Sariputta or someone with those kinds of accumulations. For most of us, we need to hear a lot more detail.
So you're saying that it's good to know that there are different visible objects that appear as different colors.
Only good to hear if it helps to understand that what appears now, what is visible, is anatta. It's just a dharma, it's just an element. So the purpose is just for the understanding of what is, what can be known right now, which is visible object, and seeing at the moment when seeing appears. Because it is just that which is visible, no matter we talk about different colors or this or that or Mahabhuta Rupas. The purpose of the teaching is just for understanding what appears at this moment. The details and what we read and all these points that we discuss is just to help the understanding of what appears as anatta.
You mean to say, if I'm told that visible object is conditioned by the four Mahabhuta Rupas, that adds to the understanding about visible object being anatta?
It explains that visible object arises, the visible object that is seen now arises by its own conditions, such as the Mahabhuta Rupas and what we were discussing earlier, conditioned by temperature, for example, because otherwise there's always going to be an idea of visible object as something, or visible object that can be controlled by a self, that one can select what is seen, for example. So by understanding more about the conditioned nature of dharmas, this is the way to understand dharmas as just elements, as not self.
And
like when we were talking about other realms, I mean, there's no purpose just in order for curiosity. So the only purpose of any of the teaching is to really understand what can be known now as anatta, as an element, just that which is experienced now.
That would be known when you, with the understanding that seeing and visible object are different. One is nama and one rupa. But talk more about the rupa, that particular rupa, that's visible object, and go on to say that visible object is one of the eight indivisible rupa that's conditioned by the four Mahabhuta Rupas. Isn't that just a story?
So it depends whether it's a story. It is conventional terms and words. It depends whether it is. This is what Ajahn said about the other day when we were discussing the sutta about whether the studying of the Dharma is for a scholarly purpose or to become an expert in Abhidharma details, or whether it's for a worldly image, or whether it's just for the purpose of understanding dharmas. So hearing about the Mahabhuta Rupas or the Kalapas is just for the purpose of understanding dharma, understanding what is real now. Otherwise there are questions like, oh, how can one lift one's arm, or how can one breathe in? But understanding about groups of rupas conditioned by citta, and how what one takes for being breath or body are just ideas, nothing to do with the realities, can help.
I mean,
about how many details that have to be studied, as Tom said, it depends on accumulations.
But it can certainly be wrongly thought about, because one might think that, for example, that these details are to be seen by awareness when it arises, somehow part of the visible object or the rupa that's experienced by awareness.
When we talked about in relation to Ken, when it is enough understanding for direct understanding and right awareness. Ajahn answered, we know when there is right awareness, but then we may still doubt what right awareness is. Do you find that too?
We can have right awareness, but still doubt what right awareness is. Because we don't understand the theory. So, but right awareness has been developed, has been punyaged, been developed, but we've forgotten the theory that explains it.
Or is it that we don't know right awareness at the moment? Without the experience of right awareness, direct awareness, it's hard to know what it is, although we do know the theory.
Oh, I thought we were saying that right awareness has arisen.
Once it arises, there will be understanding of it.
What was your question? Ajahn answered, when right awareness arises, we know that the pariyatti understanding is enough to condition direct understanding, and then we may doubt about the characteristic of right awareness, whether right awareness, when is it right, or do we confuse it with thinking about the story of realities?
I think this is where Satchanyana comes in. And we were talking about Chira Sanya the other day, firm Sanya. And when the understanding is firm, when it's very firm, pariyatti understanding, it conditions sati, conditions awareness to be aware of realities. But until it is firm, until it's firm understanding and firm Sanya, then there's bound to be doubt and forgetfulness and wondering whether it's right and wondering whether one needs to read this detail or whether it's enough. Or so I think it depends on the understanding, how firm it is to condition sati and to know when sati arises.
If I can go back to the problem with Ken, sorry, not your, that your problem, but problem with Ken is, Sarah, what we were talking just earlier, just now, I think, would it be fair to say that with the panya still being so weak, there is bound to be wrong thinking about experiences and right thinking when there's some understanding. So given that there's this tendency to have this wrong thinking about Dhamma and in daily life, the reason we need to hear more is that it sort of helps to correct the thinking in that regard. And I think the problem that comes up with Ken is that when we suggest, for example, that the microphone is different from the glasses because there's difference in rupas. To him, it seems like wrong thinking. Whereas for us, it doesn't seem like that. So I don't know who's right, who's wrong, what either of us are missing, what either of us need to hear. What would you say?
I think it comes back to now, this moment, because whether, for example, like talking about kalapas now, whether it helps condition any understanding of what is real, what is appearing now or not. Because if it's just a kind of speculating that conditions doubt and confusion and doesn't seem relevant to what can be known now, then at that moment it's not helpful. Maybe at another time it might be, but it's not pariyatti at that time. Whereas for someone else, hearing about the rupas in this way may be a condition to really understand a little more about what is appearing now as an anatta. So I think it just all depends on now, whether there's any understanding now at any level of what appears and whether it's helpful or not. And different people need points explained and
in different ways. That's why the Buddha explained in so many different ways, and what is helpful for one might not be helpful for another at that time.
It wouldn't be judged as wrong by if it is not helpful to me, I wouldn't say it's wrong. Would I?
Well, in the ultimate sense, what's right or wrong depends on whether it's kusala citta or akusala citta at the moment. Like one, it may be one may repeat the right theory, but if it's being repeated with ignorance and attachment, then it cannot be said to be right at that moment. So,
I'm talking about the standpoint of the person who's hearing someone else explain something. If the explanation is something that that person can relate with, and it doesn't relate to me, it is not helpful to me. I cannot say that it's wrong because it doesn't click, right?
And sometimes one may hear something and it doesn't really make much sense. Like, for example, Anne mentioned the other day when Ajahn started talking about Chittaja Rupas, she didn't realize the significance, but afterwards one may reflect or question or check, and then it may make more sense and be meaningful. So I don't think one can make any rules.
I don't know why Ken's and me, for example, still don't quite agree 100%.
Could it be because we're disagreeing about something which is really fundamental? And to me, I have to understand that every Dhamma that arises is anatta. And to me, anatta means no glass, no pin. Whereas some people would say, don't worry about that. The important thing is to know that the present object is not a glass or a pin. So I need to go one step further and say, not only is that not a glass or a pen, but there's no glasses or pens anywhere, anytime, never will be, never have been. Does that help?
I think you could be right and I could be right at the same time. When you say there's no glasses or pen, I would agree that there's no glass or pen. But I would say that there is a taking for glass and pen, and it's happening. It's happening for you also, and it's happening for me, because you would also take things for being this and that. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to function. Now, the question is, I go one step further and say that we can distinguish between glass and pen is because there are differences in rupas. And you find that not so helpful. Or you even disagree.
Now I found it irrelevant, but I'm starting to learn differently now.
I can understand it's irrelevant when it comes to development of understanding, and because for the purpose of right understanding, we only the reality is known. It's not glass or pen. In fact, the first step is to distinguish between concepts and reality. So why would someone try to justify concepts? Why not just talk about reality?
I know I'll be corrected if I'm wrong, but visible object is just that can be seen. Any idea that something is part of something else comes from the nimitta of the visible object, the rapid arising and falling away, which produces the distinction between shape and form. visible object isn't going to give you a picture. It's only that which can be seen. Where the picture comes from, if you look at the picture being that span, is from the sign and details as it rapidly arises and falls away.
Rapidly rising and falling away. But there's only one seeing citta. Now, that the citta that arises now has never seen anything before. So why would it matter to it that there has been this rapid and rising and falling away in the past?
Because that's the truth. Right?
It is the truth,
understand,
yes.
Understand the truth, yeah.
Yes,
that's the way it is. Yeah. Okay. And I think that the benefit of the intellectual understanding about rupa and kalapa and so on can be conditioned later, much later, to become detached from clinging to that which is clung before. Like now, if one clings to kunina, see? But by understanding that actually it's just that which can be seen with the four primary rupas only. Before that can be the understanding so great that it can condition detachment from taking nina for permanent something, see. Actually, just very fragile realities of rupa and nama, only that. By then one can understand that from hearing and considering, which cannot really understand immediately to condition detachment, but later on, more and more, for example right now, no idea about visible object as just a reality which is seen, see, even that stage is not conditioned yet. But the more hearing about the conditions and the kalapas and so on, it can sankhara khanda, not I. The jetasikas, which are sankhara khanda, are now performing the functions, no one at all, to understand little by little, and that is accumulated by their nature until right understanding can condition right awareness. Then by then, not I, who is aware at all. And there can be the understanding of the anatta-ness from life to life, no matter there is hearing, thinking. The point is to know and understand reality as not self. So the moment of direct awareness is the moment when it is the understanding which understands it. It is conditioned. So it cannot become attached to the idea of I can do anymore. But that right understanding can understand that it takes time so long by itself, by conditions, to have such moment of right awareness. Because right awareness arises and it is aware at once, as soon as it arises. So at this moment when right awareness arises, it's so natural because it is already aware. No I who can try to do it, to have it more and again. But by understanding that that moment is different from the idea of I can do or I will try. And this is the way to eliminate the idea of self gradually with right understanding of anatta-ness.
I think I may have identified one possible problem, cause for this, is that Achan just now was explaining in during her explanation, she says that hearing about all this can help to understand that there is no self. Whereas you sometimes can are led to say that understanding this means not there is no self, but there's no concept. And I think there's a difference. Understanding no self is a characteristic of reality. Understanding no concept doesn't equate for understanding anatta. It just means, it's just differentiating between reality and concept. Whereas no self is a characteristic of the reality.
One other point that, talking about rupas that we were discussing the other day, was about the clashing of rupas to make sound. So sound being the, what is the expression that?
Clashing of hardness against hardness.
Clashing of hardness against hardness. What does this mean?
Even the laughing.
Yes.
The clashing.
Of hardness. And Tam actually, she made a point that because each hardness arises in its own kalapa, separated by space. So what is, how can they clash, the hardnesses?
Strong enough to clash.
Is it?
Close enough.
Yeah. We can say great lump or hump or whatever.
Right.
Yeah. Which can clash.
But what about the space in between the kalapa?
There must be. But what about the sound, no space in between?
Yes.
See?
Is it
a clashing?
Excuse me. Even now, Pavanka must be in between. Who knows? So there are many things that cannot be known in daily life.
Is it the clashing of the rupa in one kalapa, or is it the clashing many between kalapa, two kalapas?
Between, yeah.
Between kalapas, yeah. Then.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's more or less similar to the objection some people make about the citta now already completely fallen away. How can it be the object of the falling citta? It's just how it happens. So I don't think we need to, you know, figure it.
Friend who had hoped to come but couldn't come, he was having a conversation and Jonathan was pointing out that wrong view is more harmful or dangerous than other kinds of akusala. And he said that at this time this doesn't really make sense to him because the other akusala tendencies which lead to akusala deeds and speech seem to be more serious, and that this is why there is a need for the pre-perfections that you talk about, so there's not yet wrong.
With the understanding of no self, not with the self.
The pre-perfections with the understanding of no self, okay. Because he mentioned that when you referred to the pre-perfections, you were referring to kusala without panya, but you're saying that even the pre-perfections must be with understanding.
Today, are there many moments of kusala with understanding, or only kusala without understanding?
More kusala without understanding than with understanding.
But there must be the base for kusala.
Right. And the base?
With
understanding. Mm-hmm. Okay. Uh-huh. So there must be the understanding to condition them. Okay. And he also says that he wonders why there's so little discussion about the kinds of wrong view that are mentioned regularly in the texts, such as no results of karma and so on, why we don't talk about these more. You know, in the texts they talk about the serious kinds of wrong view, such as that no deeds that bring results and so on.
You'd like to be said more?
Like?
You would like the wrong view should be said more? Should it be said more?
This is what he wonders, why not?
Not enough.
Right. And also I have a question on wrong view. You mentioned that whatever does not arise cannot be the object of wrong view. So, for example, if there's no visible object, there cannot be wrong view about visible object. It cannot be taken for something. But if, for example, we're talking about the upadanas as we were the other day, well, if we're referring to atapadupadana, then this is the taking for something. But if we're referring to ditupadana, this can be like karma doesn't bring a result, or cow worship, or no rebirth, or something like this. So these kinds of wrong views seem to be referring to realities that have arisen now.
Wrong view of self.
still wrong view of self, conditioned by the... So when we say whatever doesn't arise cannot be the object of wrong view, it means that other kinds of wrong view depend on them.
Now, to come back to the perfections, I understood that you said good deeds done without wrong view of self, or with understanding, with panya, or without panya. Pre-perfections.
Before coming to this room, what is the motive of coming? No idea at all, just walk in? Or what?
It's good to be together to discuss Dhamma.
Yes, there must be such understanding of the value of understanding the teachings.
Yes. Yes.
Even they cannot be citta with right understanding all the time. Because sometimes they can be with it or sometimes without it.
The same friend mentioned that on one or two recordings when, for example, sometimes one might say, oh, I want to have more metta or more understanding, and then you'll point to the wrong view of self, clinging to self at those moments. And his comment is, well, how can one say? Because like we were saying yesterday or the day before, if like when we say, oh, someone has metta all day, or someone is very angry, actually it's just thinking, it's just speculation. So if one says wrong view of self at that moment, actually it's just thinking. But so his question is, how can you or anyone know?
Close your eyes. Are there you or none? See,
I didn't get it.
So his question was, for example, if one says something like, well, I haven't got enough understanding, or how can I have more understanding? And Ajahn may respond by saying, clinging to self at that moment. And the question is, or attachment, and the question was, well, how can she or we or anyone say clinging to self at that moment? And Ajahn's response is, close your eyes now. Okay.
No.
Thinking about me, my body, myself. Not so common.
Not necessary.
No, you? At all?
There must be, but not all the time.
At that moment with such thinking, with the idea of self, is there? Whether that's me, still me.
Thinking of something else when you say, close your eyes.
Okay, who thinks? Okay, who thinks?
I am thinking, you mean. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What is wrong view arises. There's no self. So anytime we think this person is this is wrong view or that's wrong view, if there's no understanding there and it's just speculation, but it has nothing to do with the person. It's just wrong view arising. So I think when John says close your eyes, it just means think in terms that there's no self.
Pointing to the fact that it is so common, so close one's eyes, what's there? The clinging to the self is very, very common.
Thinking of the self. Oh, sure, all the time.
That look in the
all
mirror.
All the time.
So when the questioner said, how can anyone know? It's just law of averages, it's almost certainly there.
Like if someone raises their voice, actually, no one can know another's anger, but it's a conventional way of saying it's there.
As Alberto was saying yesterday.
Right. Well, that's the point. If one's, like one can say, oh, if one says, Ajahn has metta all day, but actually cannot be known. I mean, who can know? And it cannot be like that for anyone. But if one says, oh, there's a lot of metta, then okay, maybe.
Thank you.
when right awareness is there with right understanding, the wrong understanding of the idea of self is so clear. It clings to what? There must be the object, direct awareness to that object too.
But it must be the visible object or the sound that must be the reality there.
Or the sakaya, the body, see? Any part of the body. When even hardness just appear, the idea of my hand, my leg, or my something all the time. Because at that moment, awareness is aware of that, so it can understand the wrong understanding of the idea of self. So what is clearer? Intellectual understanding and direct awareness. See?
Here we talk about object condition and predominant object condition. So I'd like to hear about that again. Does that mean that when we talk about predominant object condition, that means a certain object is more likely to become the object of the cittas rather than others?
In Pali, it is Aramanupanisyapachaya. So we have to understand what's meant by Upanisyapachaya. Aramana is the object that is experienced more and more with attachment. So it becomes to be the strong object that one desires to have it.
I think you may also be referring to Aramana Dipati as well, about the actual mm-hmm. object itself, right?
Yes.
A particularly desirable
mm-hmm.
object that is seen as conditioning attachment.
So the difference between the two, Aramanatipati and Aramanupanisyapachaya, Aramanatipati is the object itself, the desired object, that one which you like it, until it becomes the habit, the nisya of citta, just to want to have it. Only that which is Aramanatipati, which condition the Aramanupanisya citta to cling to that. So the object which is clung as habits is Aramanupanisya, and the Aramanatipati is any desirable rupa. Objects.
So like just since I've been sitting here, one moment I saw that picture of the casket over there,
mm-hmm.
and several times it became object again and another time again. Yeah. So that
even
would be...
you leave this room, you still think about it.
Uh-huh.
It is Aramano Panisya Pachaya.
Okay. So when you talk about Upanisaya Gochara, that can be also Kusala or Akusala.
It should be only Kusala because Kusala. It will become protection.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It should be developed as the object.
Mm-hmm. So we cannot say that food is Upanisaya.
That's why Buddha used two different words, the Aramana and the Gochara.
Gochara is in the positive way. Particular
object of Buddha and his disciples to develop.
Aramana Tipati, Aramana Upanisya. Aramana Upanisya cannot be towards unpleasant objects.
You dislike, you mm-hmm. don't want to experience it again.
But it does not, as you were taking the example of in Tam, she saw that object, but some objects can attract your attention because, and with anger, each time you look at it, you're angry, but you're, bound to look at it.
Do you wish to experience it again?
Don't wish, but it just happened. So I go out thinking a lot about it because I accumulated anger.
Not with desire to have it.
That's the nature of like Aramana Upanishad. It has to be the one that is desirable or the object for kusala, but not for kusala.
Aramanatipati can be object of attachment. That's why Buddha used another word, upanisaya kojara, not aramana.
What Kunsuken's talking about is sometimes an unpleasant object can attract your attention.
Yes,
like
but
my
do you
face
desire?
When
it, do you,
you don't desire it, but
so
you keep wanting to look at it.
It's not as great as that which you desire.
It's just
I was just mentioning a comment that you'd made before, and she thought it was a good topic to bring up briefly, and that is that when you were referring to ups and downs in life and without panya, how it's unbearable, the gain and loss, all the worldly conditions, and how actually only akusala harms one. And when one is courageous, when there is understanding, then there's no blaming of other people or the situation, because there's understanding that there are only dharmas. Would you say a little more about this?
Because of kusala citta, understanding. So one can see the difference between kusala citta and akusala citta. If there is no understanding of whatever appears now, can there be enlightenment? Impossible.
And that question that we couldn't quite remember the other day about karma, was you were mentioning about karma bringing result and how other good deeds could prevent or assist that karma bringing that result. And do you remember what your
that has to do with a sutta that I read, and in that sutta the Buddha said quite explicitly that the same karma can result in different ways when the time for it to ripe is different, or to ripen in someone that is very low and someone who is very high in spiritual matter. And he gave the simile of a glass of water and a lake. When you put salt into the glass of water, then it tastes salty. But if you put the same amount of salt into the lake, it doesn't affect the quality of the lake at all. So that is a very very interesting sutta, and I would like to hear your comment about this.
Degrees of karma.
But for the same karma.
Yes, healing, different level or degrees.
But if for the same healings, but then the same karma of killing that has been performed before, but when comes the time for the fruits to happen, when it happens in a very low person, it can result in like short life, someone being killed by another person. But when it happens for a very highly developed being, it can result in just being hurt, something like that.
To arahata, what?
Arahata or something, yeah. So, what can we say about this sutta? What for me, I understood
not enough conditions to have such strong vipaka.
Yes.
many different factors required for kamma to bring its result at a given time.
We even heard of, we were even discussing about how even paktupanisya pachya has to be involved to condition the vipaka citta or cittas too. So many, many factors.
He got hit even after he was ordained by stone. People stoned him. But I'm thinking if he wasn't ordained, he would have probably been hit much more and probably hard enough to kill him.
You think only in this life or Angulimala life? What about his previous, long, long ago?
Jan Sukin was referring to the fact that he did many killings in his last life, and therefore it would seem, as I understand what Sukin said, was that perhaps if he wasn't arahat, the results might have been much more stronger.
The reason why that sutta struck me is because of our conversation earlier in Vietnam when some people raised the topic of purifying karma or transforming karma. And actually because in Vietnam, people hear a lot of the monks explaining that when you purify yourself, if you purify your karma, so if that sutta can be a good way to explain what it means, what is meant by purifying karma.
Can we simply say that there would be more and more kusala rather than before?
We're not talking about more and more kusala. We're talking about more and more, because less and less a kusala
is vipaka. Purer, the kusala is conditioned more.
Is purifying karma a term that's used in the text, or is this just an idea people have?
I have no idea. It's a very common expression that is used by people in Vietnam.
I've never heard it before.
And I think that no matter who say, we can understand reality.
It sounds like a bit of an oxymoron in a way, purifying karma. Perhaps it would always be good to check on the Pali. Mm-hmm. Word on that one. What's a Pali word there? That would be helpful.
And they call it in Vietnamese, and it sounds a little bit like
someone doing something to stop karma bringing its result.
Wishful thinking.
You remember there was a group of monks who came here who had similar idea about we have to purify ourselves first before there's understanding.
Yeah.
I think this is
a whole seat.
Done, they think they can make it lighter or neutral so it doesn't bring an effect. Yeah. It's wrong.
So when it can be understood as the effect of, you know, becoming enlightened or becoming an arahat, that some karma that have been done in the past will be lessened in effect rather than the purpose, right? Because some people, when they talk about that, they think that it's the purpose. We try to perform good deeds or purify oneself in order to lessen the effects of the karma. But it shouldn't be put in that way, but rather it's just the effect. Because the Buddha did say that it's the effect of someone becoming very highly developed.
I would be inclined to explain that the Buddha talked about purifying the citta, purifying kusala, but not about purifying kamma, and just leave it at that.
Like adipitaya, doing good for oneself.
Like the idea of developing concentration or jhana so that there can be of course, enlightenment with jhana as basis is a higher attainment than enlightenment without, but still that doesn't mean that there's the idea of developing jhana first.
What about Sariputta before he died? Very, very serious pain from, See, what about that?
Who tried to escape from the
even Buddha himself?
Robbers or the bandits who came to kill him? Purifying karma. It doesn't seem to me a concept that is found in the teachings.